Well, there are many great rivers, I think, that are associated with Wisconsin and, of course, other places as well. But I don't think any have as fabled a history and image as the Mississippi River. Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And for more than 20 years, I believe, Big River Magazine has been covering issues affecting the river and highlighting the many ways you can enjoy it. We'll be talking with the editor of Big River Magazine right now, Reggie McLeod.
Good morning, Larry.
Reggie, thanks for spending time with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, I always enjoy it.
It's always a lot of fun. And for those who might not be familiar with the Big River Magazine, you cover a broad range of issues affecting the river.
Yes, we cover the river from the Twin Cities to the Quad Cities down by Davenport, which includes the whole west coast of Wisconsin on the Mississippi River, and we cover everything that has to do with the river. We talk about recreation and business and environmental issues and towboats and history, music, pretty much anything that has to do with the river. And the reason we do that is the river doesn't get the coverage it deserves, I think, generally, and all of those things affect the other things. They're all kind of connected up, and we try to show those connections when we can, too.
Yeah, well, you do a good job of it. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question about the river or maybe a question about the magazine, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got a photo along the Mississippi River, we'd love to have you share that. And you can do that on our Facebook page as well. And contributors, a broad range of contributors from time to time that participate in the putting out of the magazine.
Oh, yeah. We have towboat pilots and actually a guy that's a pilot on an excursion boat up in St. Paul, and people who are biologists by training and students, and one of our the guy who's written a lot for us in the last year does kayak trips in the backwaters. And so, yeah, we're fortunate to have a wide range of folks helping us out with this.
You know, one of the really cool stories, and I always learn something every time I pick up the magazine, one of the cool stories for me as an educator was the story about Augsburg College and the semester where students can spend the semester on the river. A fascinating story.
Yeah, that's really amazing. They're actually studying full-time. They're getting full-time credit for going down there, and they're integrating just all different subjects in their, you know, biology and social studies kinds of things, and you know, and staying real busy getting phys ed credits for a lot of paddling.
Yeah,
and it seems to me like they're having more fun than students usually have going to school full time. And, you know, it's the sort of thing they're going to be talking about the rest of their lives, I think. I
mean, oh, absolutely.
Amazing opportunity.
Absolutely. And they start right at the headwaters and paddle all the way to the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, they're not paddling the whole way.
No.
They're doing some bus trips, and when they get below St. Louis, they're going to do some bus touring and then do some paddling some more right down at the end. But they're paddling, you know, most of the way, and the best stretch is from the Twin Cities to the Quad Cities anyway, so that's the important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Ray and Rhinelander has a question for you, so let's go there. Ray, hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, and thank you, your guest, for what he's doing and what you're presenting. As usual, Larry, nobody tops you with great events.
Thank you.
Two things. I have a question about, will there be more historic type of things in the magazine, with a combo of everything you do with the political an eco side. I know you don't want to get heavy into these things, but it seems like you guys cover a lot of this, of the gamut of all that. What's really amazing is with all the rivers in America, that one has more history, more things going on. It's just amazing how important the Mississippi River has been through the history of America and prehistory. Also, every fall we take my mother on a trip. We live in Rhinelander. We go down 51, and then we go down Highway 60 to down the Prairie du Chien, and then we go from Prairie du Chien all the way up to La Crosse, and we stop at all the little towns and go to all the festivals. And I tell you, it's just amazing what that river corridor has to offer all year round. There's so many things going on. It's just absolutely amazing. And thank you for the coverage and what you do. And I'll take your comment off the air, and thanks again.
Thanks, Ray, for calling. Appreciate it. Reggie, comments?
Yeah, thanks, Ray. We usually do more history stories in the winter because even though there are still things going on there, it's a little quiet in some of the river towns, and that gives us an opportunity to kind of catch up on history stories. And the March-April issue is specifically kind of our history issue, but we have history stories year-round, but it's a little heavier in winter. We've started using January, February as our boat issue, too, and we do a lot of boat stories, and some of those are usually historical as well. And, yeah, I agree about the river towns. What can I say? I love doing that. I often do that myself on weekends. I'm never tired of it. And after, and this, we're almost 24 years into this now,
yeah.
And I can still go to places in the river and find places I've never been before. It's getting harder and harder, so it's more of a challenge, but I love doing that. That's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah. And, of course, you keep readers informed about what is coming up in the way of festivals and such.
Oh, yeah. We talk about festivals, and we have information on our website, too. And, special events. And in the winter, one of the things that happens a lot, well, this time of year, probably the most exciting thing, I think, for most people is the swan migration. And that's the last big migration down the river. And there are places where you can go and see thousands of swans in one place. And it is so loud, it's a cacophony, like they're all talking all the time. And in fact, I've stopped by some of those sites early in the morning, actually, 1 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes, if I'm driving home from somewhere, I'll pull off the road and listen, and it's just amazing just to hear the sound. And they even fly over Winona, where I live. Sometimes I'm walking home, and they'll be flying low right over the town, and all talking to each other at the same time.
Wow.
Maybe they're not really talking, but I suspect they are. And there's great places to view them by Brownsville, Minnesota, Goose Island, just downriver from La Crosse, Alma, Wisconsin. There's still a few there. But because the weather's been so nice, the migration has been going a little slow this year. What's going to happen probably, like this happened last year too, it's going to turn cold all of a sudden, and there's going to be a big rush. You know, it'll happen all at once, so kind of watch out for that. But that's really a lot of fun this time of year.
Oh, absolutely. Marilyn in Montford had a comment about her question about the swans. Marilyn, hi. Marilyn, are you there? You know what? I think you probably answered her question.
Oh, okay.
So she hung up because that's what she was going to ask about. You know, it's kind of fun. Funny. I have a personal page on Facebook as well as our radio program page, and on my personal page, as you know, Facebook every so often now will pop up a picture that had been posted years back, and there was a post a couple days ago that. From 4 years ago, and it was a shot of me with some field glasses looking at those swans on the Mississippi River with a group of people. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's really a lot of fun to see the birds. They're not only swans, others as well.
Well, I was down by Brownsville at that overlook a week and a half ago, And there were swans there, maybe 100 or a couple hundred, but there was a big flock of pelicans too, and I usually don't see them this late in the season. And of course, there are various ducks there. I mean, it's a real feast for bird watchers usually.
It's a great place if you're a bird watcher for sure. But, William in La Crosse has a question. Hi, William. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks. To mention Brownsville. Yeah, I was there just Sunday, and there's a lot more birds, by the way.
Cool.
Over at Brownsville. But my question is regarding the Mississippi going in, you know, where it goes into the ocean in the Gulf. I've had concern or have thought about the fact that I think there is a dead zone down there in the ocean. Is that true? And if it is that going to get any better maybe in the future?
Well, I could talk a long time about that. Yes, it's a concern, and that same pollution that causes the dead zone causes a lot of problems up here, too. It's not as dramatic, but it's still a problem on the whole length of the river, especially below the Twin Cities. The dead zone this year was huge down there, and it's an area where there's not enough oxygen in the water to support life, so there's no fish and no shrimp, and it's a size. Usually it's kind of funny. I call it the state of the dead zone because they usually compare it to the size of a state. They'll say it's the size of Rhode Island or Connecticut or something. And I think this year it was the size of two states. I can't tell you which small states, of course.
Yeah.
But it's been pretty bad, and there have been a lot of initiatives and a lot of talk about fixing it, but nothing that's really yielded any results, and a lot of the problem starts with some agricultural practices, and that's difficult to change, but a lot of people are working on it, and we certainly write about that a lot in the magazine, some of those efforts.
Absolutely. Thanks, William, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your own questions or comments about the river, the Mississippi, as we visit with Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. I'm Larry Mueller. Jennifer Lentz, Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer. Boy, how could I forget her name? Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11:45 today, we're going to be talking about a beautiful photo book and storybook called The Living Bird. The photographer joins us and talks about his experiences documenting wildlife. And I think probably the most stunning bird photos I've ever seen in one collection. So it's really something. So it'll be fun to talk about that. But right now, having a lot of fun talking about the Mississippi River and Big River Magazine. Reggie McLeod, our guest, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. Always great to have him stop by and talk with us about what's going on along the Mississippi. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. If you got a nice photo of the Mississippi or a question about it, you can also go to our Facebook page and post at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You had a nice introduction this time. Well, you always do, but this one, you're talking about your experiences walking along railroad tracks as a kid, and that sort of leads into your article about the railroad tracks and what's going on with the railroads.
Well, there's a lot going on, and a lot of it has to do with shipping oil from the frack well fields in North Dakota, and that has increased the rail traffic a lot. And as a consequence, the railroads have been rebuilding a lot of stretches and expanding switching yards and so on. And it just so happens that those railroads run parallel with the river, often right next to the river and almost always between the highway, the access point, and the river. And in this last issue, we were kind of dealing with problems with that, because to cross railroad tracks anywhere but an official designated crossing is trespassing. And the railroads have generally been not too aggressive enforcing that, but they appear to be getting more aggressive enforcing that. And a lot of people are used to maybe for not only for decades, but maybe for generations, you know, parking somewhere and walking across the railroad tracks and fishing or duck hunting or deer hunting. And that's changing. It's getting rougher to do. And, of course, the railroads point out that it's a safety issue and people do get killed on the tracks. And there's some problems. And there are tracks in places like Lansing, Iowa, where the tracks go right down the street. I mean, there are a lot of awkward places with railroad tracks, and people are concerned about it. And, of course, with those oil trains, they have been known to derail and explode and cause enormous damage and even loss of life. I think it was 40-some people were killed in a small Canadian town where that happened, and we just had a derailment by Alma a week and a half ago. And that, fortunately, that was only ethanol, but ethanol is still, there was 20,000 gallons that leaked into the river there, and that's not good. But it would have been a lot worse had it been oil.
Yeah. So, something to think about. Tim in Viroqua has another comment on something totally different. Let's go there. Tim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for your show today. I live near Viroqua, so I do spend quite a bit of time on the river down south of La Crosse, like Goose Island Park and things like that. But I was a longtime resident of Minneapolis, and I think a lot of people don't realize that the only natural waterfall on the Mississippi is the entire reason that Minneapolis is even there. And it's also the only natural gorge on the Mississippi River, which I lived about three blocks from for about a decade. And it's beautiful. It's an incredible natural feature. You couldn't even get to Minneapolis by boat until they built the Ford Dam and the Ford plant in the 1920s. It was once upon a time all rapids, and there's actually some movement to take out Lock and Dam number one and allow the river to return to the whitewater state that it was in until they built the Ford Dam. So anyway, visit Minneapolis. It's a beautiful stretch of the river.
Oh, yeah. You should write a story for Big River, Tim.
Yeah, right.
and that water, that natural kind of waterfall.
Yeah, it's, well, technically it's natural. It's the Army Corps of Engineers has a way of changing things like that. And it's been reinforced by concrete, because one of the reasons that it's there is there's a layer of hard limestone with a layer of soft sandstone underneath, the kind of sandstone that's used for frack oil well drilling. And as the water churns at the bottom of the waterfall, it erodes that sandstone, and then the limestone collapses. So that waterfall has been moving pretty fast upstream in terms of geological time. It's been moving pretty fast. And once they had built all these, the mills, the flour mills that were built there, and lumber mills first and then flour mills, took advantage of the hydropower at that waterfall for energy. And when they had a catastrophic collapse there around, I think it was early this century, the Army Corps went in and kind of reinforced it and built it. So it looks a little symmetrical and straight for a natural feature, and it is. It's still gorgeous, and the whole waterfront through the Twin Cities is very well taken care of. There are excellent trails, bike trails, hiking trails, a lot of good access in the Twin Cities. And I paddled through there a number of times too. It's a great stretch of water to paddle.
The whole waterfront in the river gorge there. I think the city kind of turned its back on it for many decades, and now it's really kind of rediscovered it. And it's a wonderful part of the city now.
Yeah, I like I like Minneapolis. It's a cool town in many ways, and that's obviously that part of it really makes it special. Yeah, thanks a lot, Tim, for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, you can join in, too. Question or comment, story to share, call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page, and you can post your questions or your comments there. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You mentioned duck hunters earlier, Reggie, in relation to, I think, the railroad tracks, and that got me. That reminded me that you've got an article on the duck camp, generations of waders and web feet, something like that.
Yes, yes, that's a fun article, and Ted Peck, who wrote that, Captain Ted Peck, I should say, is a guide too on the river, and he guides people fishing and hunting, and this is the second article he's done for us, and he's working on another one. He's really knows his way around the river and has a lot of good memories and and he's out there, I think, almost every day now still. So and this just talks about the tradition of duck hunting with duck hunting and fishing and deer hunting. A lot of times that kind of becomes an extended family event, or you kind of have a group of people that get together just once a year and see each other and do this together. And that's kind of what this story is about, a group that of guys that he grew up with down by Savannah, Illinois, and hunted with every year. And one of the stories in here he was a little uncomfortable telling about, that might have involved some vandalism, but I encouraged him to fess up. And I think it's beyond the statute of limitations, so it's probably safe to do.
I was intrigued with the photo of the blind, the rat house blind, that looks kind of like a muskrat house. I thought, man, that's quite a blind.
Yeah, no, that's clever. And I'll tell you, I don't duck hunt myself, but when I'm out on the river this time of year, I can get awfully close to some of these blinds before I see them. I mean, they're pretty clever. They blend in pretty well, and but the interesting thing with duck hunting is duck hunters like it best when they're the most uncomfortable.
Yeah, when it's windy and rainy.
Yeah. They like that miserable weather. Those beautiful days are really discouraging to duck hunters. With the wind from the south, they don't like that. So
there you go. Don in Pittsville has a question. Don, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I was wondering, you know, if he's familiar with the American Queen. You know, that's a riverboat, you know, a luxurious one.
Sure.
That goes on the Mississippi, and there's a company called America by Rail. They're offering a trip. You know, you take a train from Chicago up to Minnesota or the Twin Cities, and then they take you by bus down to Red Wing, and then it goes down to St. Louis on the American Queen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
And I was just wondering, you know, if you ever had that experience on a big river boat like that.
Well, I've been on the American Queen and pretty much all of the other ones, and I haven't been, frankly, I don't make enough money with the magazine to afford an excursion. But for years I knew both of the guys that piloted the American Queen when it came up on this part of the river. Mm-hmm. One of them is from Winona and the other is from St. Louis, actually. Mm-hmm. But I would usually go on there and have a cup of coffee and visit with them, and I got tours of the boats and that sort of thing. And we've arranged some short unofficial rides on the American Queen, I guess. But no, I'd love to do that, though. It would be dreamy. And I've done this all day on Delta Queen. I mean, the Julia Bell Swain in La Crosse. And being up that high above the river and looking down on the towns and the backwaters is just a wonderful experience. And it's almost dreamlike to drift down the river on a big boat like that. It's really great.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. Don, thank you so much.
Yeah, Don, you should do it. I think you should do it.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. And you mentioned dreamy, and Cheyenne just alerted me to our Facebook page. Charlie sent us a photo of a shot along the river and the railroad track. They're along the Mississippi, the railroad tracks. It looks like it's just dusk, and talk about a dreamlike quality. That is a beautiful photo. That's on our Facebook page at Posts from Post to Listeners over on the left side. If you happen to be on the page, click on Posts, and you'll see that beautiful photo. It's really nice. Okay. You speaking of photos, you have obviously you had a photo contest, and some of the winners.
Well, it's not ours. It's the Fish and Wildlife. Well, I think it's Friends of the Upper Mississippi River
right.
Refuge, and they've had an annual contest most years, and we usually publish some of the winners, and sometimes we pick some of the ones that we like that maybe didn't win a first prize, but we got a kick out of them. So, yeah, we have some in the center spread of the magazine this time, and those are always great. My favorite one is the beaver down at the bottom. Stretched out on
yeah.
top of this muskrat hut, taking a nap in the sun. It's just really a cool
shot. A very, very, very cool shot. You wonder, how did he get that, or how did she get that shot?
Yeah, you'd have to be awfully sneaky or have an awfully long lens to get that shot.
Yeah. John in Brookfield has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Good morning. I've just been listening on the car radio and to the answer about the dead zone.
Yes.
And my question is about the fact that the city of Des Moines is suing the local farmers for runoff of ammonium nitrate into their rivers. And ammonium nitrate is a fertilizer for corn. And yet the algae in the Gulf loves that fertilizer too. And the growth of the dead zone is attributed to the fact that ammonium nitrate is being fed into the Gulf by the Mississippi. And I wonder if you've got any comment on
that. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for calling, John.
Well, most studies have shown that most of that ammonia nitrate, and there are other forms of nitrate that get in the water too, are from agricultural runoff. And the fact that we're using so much ethanol in gasoline as a gasoline additive has spurred people planting a lot more corn than they used to. And often they put the new fields in the more marginal land that might be wetter land or might have more runoff. And the city of Des Moines, I helped put together a panel at a conference about a month and a half ago, and we had the head of the water department there speaking about that. And that's an interest. That's a suit to watch, because agricultural runoff is exempted from the Clean Water Act, but he argued that water that comes out of drainage tiles is not runoff. It's groundwater to get into the drainage tiles. And when it's flowing out of a pipe, it's not agricultural runoff anymore. It's point source pollution. And then levee districts that have a lot of drain fields often pump the water again over the levee or through the levee into the river. And that's what's polluting the river water that he has to use for drinking water for the city of Des Moines. And he says that's point pollution. It's not agricultural runoff because it's coming through a pipe. And it's going to be an interesting legal case. But they've had to install very, very expensive. In fact, they have old filters that they're going to have to replace soon. It's very expensive to get that out of the water. It's a whole different process than your conventional water treatment plant has to use. And it used to just be a problem in Des Moines in the summer, and now there's so much of it in the water that it's a problem intermittently year-round. They even have that problem in the winter sometimes in the fall, which they didn't used to have. So it's his job to provide clean water to the citizens of Des Moines, and he can't do it. The water is so bad. Up around here, the Minnesota River is a huge source of pollution to the Mississippi. The Mississippi is much cleaner upstream from the Minnesota River, which flows in the Twin Cities, than it is right below the Minnesota River. It has a lot of agricultural chemicals in it below the Minnesota River. So That's something I know we can find solutions and clean it up and hopefully can be fair about it. I mean, it's a complicated thing to do, though. And it is, a lot of the practices are exempted from the Clean Water Act. So it's tough to do. But this case in Des Moines is going to be really interesting, and it could cause dramatic changes all across the country if they win their case.
Hmm. And, John, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. I want to turn to Jim in Mauston next, who has a comment for us. Jim, hello.
Hi, Larry and Reggie. How are you?
Great.
Hi.
Appreciate the call.
Say, my mother lives in Lansing above the she's a few blocks away, but it seems like she's almost right on top of the river. But that S-turn on the bend there has to be one of the most severe turns on the river. And I was over there one day when you've got a barge coming downriver and another one coming upriver, and they met just below the bridge. And I guess the upriver, the barge going downriver, always has the right-of-way. But it got to be where they were so close and maneuvering their barges, I'm sure it took them at least an hour, hour and a half to get out of their predicament. And I would think that they were probably no closer than a few feet at one time. Just wanted to bring that up, and as well as Mount Hosmer there, it gives you some beautiful views of the islands.
Yeah. Well, let me talk about both those things real quickly, if I have time.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
That is one of the really tough spots on the river, and it's dangerous, and the tow pilots sometimes feel like they're pushing too many barges. The maximum load that they can push on this stretch of the river is 15 barges. But that's pretty hard to control in high water, especially in some places like this. There are some kind of pillars built in the river upstream of the bridge abutments to protect the bridge. And there have been a number of collisions of barges with those and having barges break loose and float free down there. So it's a tough situation. If in times of high water, and it's a little bit high right now, they could do smaller loads, it would be safer, but there's always a lot of pressure to get products down and save money and speed things up. So, and there are other places like that too on the river, and they do try to fix them when the opportunity arises, when they're replacing a bridge or something like that. The overlooks, that's kind of fun this time of year, because when the leaves fall off the tree, maybe the woods aren't as pretty, but it gives you a much better view in some of the overlooks, like Maiden Rock, which is between Pepin, Wisconsin, and Maiden Rock, Wisconsin, up on the bluff there. And I was just down in Effigy Mounds across from Prairie du Chien. And you just get these views that you can't get the rest of the year when the leaves are on the trees. So don't give up on those overlooks this time of year. It might be a little windy and chilly up there, and you might want to wear your blaze orange if you're around places where people are hunting. But, boy, I had a wonderful time out there a couple Sundays ago, and you could see the river almost all across the ridge when you were walking. You didn't just have to go to the overlooks. You could see right through the trees and see the river.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And, you know, every season has its own beauty. I really think that when the leaves are off the trees and that sort of dark, various shades of gray that you see in the woods is really very pretty.
Yeah, and all those shades of brown and,
mm-hmm.
and the reds and yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate your call, and. One, and just sort of as we're winding up here, Reggie, a favorite article in the magazine that we haven't talked about yet. There's quite a few actually. I've Sowing Wild Rice and Lacrosse. Oh, that's a cool thing.
Yeah. Boy, I don't know. I like them all. One thing that I wanted to mention here really quickly about this year is. There have always been people paddling the length of the river or going down in different boats or swimming or, you know, paddle boards. But it seems to really be increasing these last couple years. And I think this year we had more people going down the river. And there's a really good, we on our website track that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also kind of a new Facebook page called Mississippi River Paddlers, and that and they kind of keep track of it. And there's a whole system of people who call themselves river angels who kind of help the paddlers out who are going down the river. So that Augsburg paddle of the students, that might be starting a whole new thing, Larry. I mean, you might see other universities doing that. I'm sure there are professors that are trying to arrange that so they can get out of the off the campus for a few months and paddle the river. And
boy,
we're going to write about that in January. We do kind of a roundup on that. So that's something I've been thinking about.
Something to look forward to. And we have a link on our Facebook page to your magazine, BigRiverMagazine.com, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
BigRiverMagazine.com. How many issues a year do you publish? I forgot. Six?
Every other month.
Every other month, yes. That's what I thought.
Every year.
And it's always fun to get the latest issue. I open it up right away and take a look at what you've been up to, Reggie,
yeah.
And it's always fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, you'll come back and be with us again.
I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks so much, Reggie.
Sure. Thanks, Larry.
Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. It's a fun magazine. It's full of information about the Mississippi River. And I always learn a lot. I don't spend a lot of time on the Mississippi or along the Mississippi, not as much as I guess I'd like. But I sure am helped and pleased to see that publication when it comes out every other month. Big River Magazine. I was also extremely pleased to see a copy of the book called The Living Bird, 100 Years of Listening to Nature. What's that all about? Well, you know what? We're going to find out all about that in just a few seconds here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller.